born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today. The ever-dwindling population, because quite frankly, we're still in the pandemic era.
What do you think?
It's pretty...
I think someone was watching out of a window back there.
It's you. That was just a curtain blowing. Are we ready to go on?
What did I tell you? A cup!
No!
Tallest giant I've ever
Professor Itork Gorn, Melk Institute, working under a grant from the state. And you? An interesting phrase which serves at the heart of what we'll be discussing in the latest edition of Resonance Rewind. What will the Resonance Rewind team make of the Mechanical Man? Fascinating insight into the Lilliputian take on really the Frankenstein monster in this particular episode, with Harry Harris directing and, of course, Owen Allen and William Stewart writing. Let's turn straight away to our singer-songwriter extraordinaire, currently based in France, Victoria Simmons. With so many lines, including the character Itork Gorn, as we mentioned, well, Itork Klingonese, but that's a different line entirely. What did you make of this particular adventure in the alternate world of the crew of the Spindrift in their giant land?
I actually quite liked it. I thought it was a bit like The Borrowers, sort of on an edge with that. I don't know, they were sort of giants but didn't look like giants, which was kind of nice. And the little people didn't look as though they were supposed to be little people. They were both human size, or proportionately human size, obviously. I thought it was a good storyline. There were a few weird elements in it, I think, but
I'm looking
otherwise,
forward
it was
to,
solid.
yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what Jessica in particular actually makes of a Chipper, which clearly Barry Lockyer's dog, who unfortunately falls into quicksand, a narrative trope which was used frequently, certainly in the 1960s. It seemed as though quicksand was everywhere in most adventure series, and you just have all manner of challenges. It seems to have lost popularity recently. And I have to say that even my biological techniques were stretched. I presume it was a ferret that Fitzhugh was being threatened with to actually stimulate his adrenal gland, which of course Mark Wilson said, Fitzhugh, don't move a muscle, which of course he tries not to until he's poked with a pencil. There are moments in this particular episode which I must admit I thought, well, that has to be tongue in cheek. It's just unbelievable. Jared Palmer, was this the first time you've ever encountered Irwin Allen's Land of the Giants?
I believe this is actually because I haven't heard of this show before, and this is one of the science fiction shows I've never heard of. So it was interesting coming into it. I did think the effects for its time were amazing, actually, because I think to do that as well as having the miniatures and having the giant people, well, the supposed giant people, at the same time for the effects back in, was it the 60s, 70s?
68, 1968,
68,
69.
yeah, was really effective. And I was a bit confused about what the story was supposed to be, but I think the intro cleared it up to me about a couple of a group of humans sort of trapped in this sort of like world where giants, humanoid creatures are basically like dominate the planet and they have to survive. And I think from this, it was a very interesting episode, and it's sort of like it goes into, I would say the same with Victoria with the Boroughs. I felt like I was watching that film again, and I also felt a bit like watching The Mist, where what happens if the human race sort of becomes the insects or the bugs of like other beings. So it was an interesting show, and definitely the Mechanical Man was definitely interesting as well.
Well, we do have again a reference, I suppose, even to the creature himself in Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and of course that sequence, as I mentioned, with Chipper, the dog, where obviously the Mechanical Man, who apparently is somewhat taken out of joint, no pun intended, in terms of having problems with his hydraulic system not being insulated enough, and so on. And again, it's intriguing that, of course, the scientist—I won't say mad scientist—but the somewhat interesting character of iTalk effectively is having this whole experience of, ultimately he's destroyed by his own creation. That classic line which we see there, even with the assistant scientist arguably very much doing an excellent job of being the character of Zorro. Played by Stuart Margolin, who of course could well be seen as a cipher for Igor as well from that perspective. I mean, Jared, you mentioned, of course, the introduction to this whole piece. And yes, I think the opening credits do kind of give very much a précis, if you never actually encountered it, that this is a crew who are in the suborbital flight Spindrift, piloted by Steve Burton, and of course, his co-pilot with their ever faithful stewardess Betty. And they got caught in what was basically seen as a space warp or a time warp, which saw them land quite literally in a land where everything was huge in comparison to Captain Steve Burton, Mark Wilson, Dan Erickson, Betty Hamilton, Valerie Scott, Barry Lockridge, of course, Orphan Barry, and the character of Alexander Fitzhugh, who also kind of references, I think, the role of Zachary Smith in the Lost in Space series that, of course, we've looked at from that point of view. Victoria, how did you feel the whole thing developed? Because I did feel that the dialogue sometimes had cause for concern. I mean, the number of times Steve Burton kind of says, I'll tell you about it when we get here. I'll tell you about it when we get here. There's a wonderful moment where we have obviously Dan, who's been summoned to the phone and actually goes off with Valerie to help with Steve and so on. And the line he says is, Steve, there was a dead man lying here when we arrived. What happened? I'll fill you in when you get here. I'll tell you later, he says. He's obviously a master of procrastination, is Steve Burton, but maybe that's just me. How did you feel the thing was developed?
There were lots of elements that you weren't quite sure what was happening at the beginning. I didn't know about the time warp thing. I must have missed that. But I was sort of thinking, well, did they go into a place where it's a land of giants, or have they been miniaturized into a world of normal people, or what we would call average-sized people? So that it kind of took half of my thinking whilst watching it.
We do have that little sequence where the scientist effectively introduces himself and obviously realize that Mark Wilson is also a scientist, and Wilson has to deal with the notion that the little people, as he's referred to, are supposedly more advanced and more technically gifted than the giants that are actually there. And obviously there is this suspicion that we see with the state-run organization of the giants that very much sort of addresses this police state. Which is why the SID, which regularly crops up, are seen as the villains who effectively are looking to basically do away with the little people, who are very much seen as not just the mischief makers, but arguably the alien villains of the piece as well, from that point of view. I mean, from the overall feeling, Jared, did you get a sense that actually, if you use it as a metaphor for quite literally the ordinary souls, the little people that in many ways we all are and exist as, etc., then maybe that that does actually raise part of the fun experience, that the line of what are we trying to do? We're just trying to survive.
Yeah, I think I did see that in a way. I did see it definitely with survival and like trying to like survive, especially with also like the creation of life for also the mechanical man, and also like being the idea of like us being like insects in a much wider sort of universe where anything is possible. So I did see the sort of metaphorical and the sort of way that was being played out. But I did think it was definitely interesting to see what it would be like if we were small as well. And I definitely did like the way they use like animals that wouldn't normally be like scary and stuff, like the ferret in the cage scene. And I really did like that idea of using it to sort of like what would it be like if we were its food. And I think it was a definitely interesting opposition there as well.
I mentioned Gulliver's Travels, obviously, in the introduction, and I think Jonathan Swift plays around with this in terms of Lilliput and clearly the essence of Brobdingnag, etc. You've got giants and small people and so on. And he was using that to comment on society. For me, the most potent scene was probably the last one. The question that Barry actually has, the discussion he's having with Fitzhugh about was the mechanical man evil? Was he intrinsically evil? How could he be evil if he actually saved his dog Chipper? I mean, Victoria, your thoughts on that? Because I thought that was quite a sophisticated way of actually, taking us out into at least that question of, well, yeah, what was it, was he it, the hydraulic man, intrinsically an evil person? Because of course he's killed, at least that we know of, two people.
No, I find it interesting as well that it's always the children that come up with those ideas, and it's not the adults that have thought about it. And it was a really nice moment when you see the robot almost looking at it and going and starting to think, what do I do with this? I think there's moments with Frankenstein as well where he starts thinking for himself and just scooping up this tiny dog. He must have looked at it and gone, oh, what's this? I don't compute what this thing is in my hand. Do I crush it or do I put it down? And at one moment, I did think he was going to crush it.
Yeah, well, that would have destroyed Barry completely. I mean, he was already an orphan. If he lost his dog as well, it would be just the end for his whole thing. Stefan Arngrim, of course, I think went on to have a bit of a career in music after a time, and I think is still with us. Unlike, of course, Deanna Lund, who sadly passed a few years ago now, playing Valerie Scott. What about gender relation? I mean, it's often said, and some people said, well, that's because she was actually having a baby during the second season. So all Betty was actually doing, Betty Hamilton, played by Heather Young, was pretty much answering the telephone and saying, there's a call for you, Steve. It's Dan, it's Don. He needs to speak to you, etc. Deanna Lund, the heiress Valerie Scott, that we see obviously pairing up with a whole range of things. And again, another one of those interesting, but not quite sure how effectively it actually worked when she actually is told by Steve to stay exactly where she is and wait for them to come back, but insists on actually going along with them, basically. How did you feel, Victoria, that women were portrayed, the two of them that we obviously saw in this particular episode?
Well, it was nice to see that the woman was actually in charge on the ship. It left a woman in charge, so they obviously had confidence in her. Why the woman was on the ground, I don't understand why they had so many people on the ground. But she just seemed as though she was not a third wheel, but somehow had no place being there. She just... They're saying, "Oh, just stay here and be quiet," sort of thing.
Arguably, she helped with the periscope, which was again a new piece of technology that they used.
She had no role in it. There was nothing for her to do except sort of get scooped up and be used as almost a toy.
Although there is that interesting connection where we see when together with Fitzhugh, they've clearly planned a strategy to actually ensure that they can actually escape, because they clearly do not trust the Professor Gorn and work on that basis. And again, Fitzhugh, I think here in the second season, had kind of moved on from when we're first introduced to him in the pilot episode, that he's seen as very much a con person, a con artist, somebody who effectively will look after himself first and so on. And there is a kind of change around, as obviously the seven of them effectively come to terms with their exile, their experiences, and obviously that desire to go back to Earth, and the sense that they might get back to Earth, and this might be a way in which they could conceivably get the power and energy of the spaceship to return to Earth as well. Jared, any thoughts from yourself? I mean, again, I mentioned Deanna Lund and Heather Young. They were actually the only women. Every other member of the cast obviously were all male. Although arguably you could say that Don Marshall was again breaking new ground here. He'd obviously been in the Galileo 7 episode of Star Trek as the second in command, and again a non-white co-pilot of a Spindrift.
Well, I'd have to say it was quite interesting. I think I would have liked to have seen a bit more of Betty, but I can understand why, if of course the personal issues behind the set and of course like personal things get in the way. I think for me, I think I come at it from a different point of view, because I'm used to seeing Star Trek Voyager and Star Trek Next Gen as well as Enterprise, when you have a lot more of female people as in crew members, if they're in like a really high position, come down to the surface when they're on the ground team rather than staying on the ship. So I don't see Barry Scott's position as being anything negative, but I think I can understand why that is. I think maybe if you would have given it a bit more time and development in this episode, maybe she could have done a little bit more. But I think for me, when you're used to watching Voyager or Next Gen, when you had Tasha Yar or you had B'Elanna Torres come down to the surface as well, so it's sort of, to me, that sort of, I would say it was maybe some inspiration there, but I think for me, because I'm just used to it a little bit more, so I guess maybe I'm not as fussed about it, but I do kind of see what Victoria had about it. So,
yeah, just to give her a more of a role would have been nice. That's all.
Somebody who I think chewed the scenery very effectively as Professor Gorn, I talk Gorn, Broderick Crawford. How did you feel he portrayed the villain of the piece? Victoria, did you, or was he a villain? Was he a misunderstood scientist? Because again, he does come to a sticky end.
Little man,
I can't believe it.
is not the same man.
It's the same man.
We should be dead by now.
Zorro, save him.
It's a remarkable robot, Professor.
I prefer to call him the Hydraulic Man.
Where do you control him from?
The command board is in the workroom in the corner. Both of you, you're Earth scientists, aren't you?
Don't know the first thing about it.
You?
Yes, I am.
I was right in bringing you here. I've read about you little people. Your technology is way ahead of ours, and I need help.
Well, you won't get it from me, Professor.
Why not?
Because your invention's a deadly one. It's too dangerous to even exist.
It wasn't meant to be dangerous. It was meant to be beneficial.
After what we saw earlier tonight, you can't be serious.
What happened tonight wasn't meant to happen. It was a complete malfunction. You helped me find the problem, and I guarantee you the gratitude of our government.
Now, we've had ample proof of your government's gratitude.
Well, you can trust me.
Well, gives me the slightest chance, it might get us out of here.
All right, but I may be of no help at all.
But you are willing to try.
I'm sorry about the cage, but it's necessary.
Mark, you must trust him. It's the only chance we've got.
I'm Professor Otto Gorm, Oak Institute, working on a grant from the state. And you?
Mark Wilson, Caltech and MIT, designer and consultant in space technology.
And the other Earthling?
Alexander Fitzhugh.
If he's not a scientist, what does he do?
What the rest of us do, he fights for survival. We're gonna go in right here. We should miss any of the main rooms.
Steve?
Yeah?
What's this new murder weapon we're supposed to have?
That's the Giants. It's not us.
Well, what kind of weapon is it?
Well, it is a giant, and it's the largest one you ever saw, and he shakes off bullets like they're flea bites. I'll tell you all about it. Let's get started first.
Oh, Mr. Wilson, this is Mr. Zorro. He's going to help us. My assistant was at the controls when a malfunction took place.
Did you receive any feedback from the robot to the board?
Yes. I'm amazed you would have guessed it. Lights indicated that hydraulic systems I hadn't programmed for use had been activated.
I'd like to take a look at the schematic plans for the robot's receiving system.
Sure.
See anything wrong, Professor?
Well, there is something wrong. The Hydraulic Man is designed to obey orders without fail. He doesn't. He goes crazy.
Something within the robot caused it. The only comparison I can think of offhand is the effect of the adrenaline gland on the human being.
I know nothing about glands. I only know about mechanics.
Well, haven't you ever watched a cornered rat? Great fear or anger creates an abnormal strength or ferocity.
The Hydraulic Man doesn't know fear or anger. He knows nothing.
Wrong, and the Earthling's right.
We'll see about that.
I don't actually see him that much of a villain because he is trying to rectify something that he feels is wrong. And at one point he does say that it wasn't meant for anything malicious. It was just meant to be something that's helpful. So, which sometimes is very often the case with things that turn out to be terrible, that they didn't start out like that. But no, I don't think he's that much of a villain. He dies, but
he does indeed.
That's just the way it goes.
And again, I thought there was a nice twist in terms of his associate Zorro. as again we've mentioned, played by Stuart Margolin, because there is a moment when I think actually he's going to betray all sorts of things and he's going to effectively go off on his own routine. He never quite does that. But we don't quite know how he sort of evolves from that. But again, seems to be seen as a character that, as I said earlier, probably was very much the mirror image of Igor or the equivalent in the Frankenstein series. Jared, I mean, let's talk favorite characters. I mean, as opposed to specifics, anybody that stood out to your good self as being, yeah, I've got to go for either Chipper or the policeman played by Richard Carlyle, or will it be Gary Conway, of course, leading man of the series, and somebody who'd obviously channeled his success in a series called Amos Burke, Private Eye, earlier in the 60s to continue his work. I think he went on to actually have a winery in California following Land of the Giants and so on. But anyway, your favourite thoughts and characters, Jared?
Well, I would say my favourite thoughts is that I kind of like the camera angles and the effects that they used, and I think it still holds up pretty today. I don't see any technical errors or anything. I would say my favourite moments would have been the bit in the cage where Professor Gore releases the ferret and Alexander has to, unfortunately, like, stop himself from, like, moving to stop it from, like, coming at him and, like, mauling it or eating him. And I did like how, like, the professor was just poking him with the pencil as, like, he's just like, I'm about to die, and then I'm just being poked gently by it. But I would say, I think for me, it's favourite character for the moment is quite hard because I think I've only just watched this episode, so it's quite hard for me to get used to a lot of the characters without watching a bit more of the backstory. But I would have to say, I probably would say it was Mark, having to do a little bit more work on the episode. But I think I'd need a little bit more time watching the series if I have to reevaluate that, though.
So Mark Wilson, of course, played by Don Matheson, again, sadly passed a few years ago. In terms of, again, another line that's uttered by the professor, I know nothing about glands. I only know about mechanics. Again, that the line which I think probably stretched certainly hard science folk here would say, so what you're saying that you can just generate an automatic adrenal gland in this robot, which will basically make it go off the walls, etc. Maybe it's a suspension of disbelief thing that we actually need for that. Victoria, given that music for this was produced and written by John Williams, of course, who would go on to write the Star Wars score, the Raiders of the Lost Ark score, the Jaws. I mean, basically, it's hard to find a blockbuster movie of the late 70s, 80s, and indeed arguably 90s with Jurassic Park that John Williams hasn't been connected with. How did you rate the music? And again, let's talk about your own favourite characters.
Well, I know you always ask me about the music questions, so I
because
try
you're
to listen
a musician,
really hard.
As well as an actress.
I know, but the point is I tried to listen really hard to the music, but couldn't actually find much there. So,
and is that a good thing? Because some people might say that actually that's good because you don't actually have the music there is just as cues. It's not something which is overwhelming. There is an argument that sometimes the music score can overwhelm the actual narrative.
Yeah, there was, whether it was intentional to just be low key or the fact that he did terribly at it, I'd like to think that it was the intention to be low key, but musically it worked with the story. Favorite character, though, I have to go as to, is it Kasner?
Yes.
With Alexander. I think that his character was just brilliant, and I as you say, in one part he had some sort of plan when he's not telling them the information that they want, and has almost a very good plan of getting drunk at the same time. Which is quite fun. But it was when he was waking up and they said that they'd taken blood. And that's when I sort of went, oh my God, they've taken blood. Big people that poked a gigantic pencil at him that covered his whole shoulder are now taking blood from him. Did they have to use a human size, Earth-sized one, or did they actually use a gigantic... a giant one, and that would have killed him and crushed him. What on earth did they do? And I spent 5 minutes just going, oh my God, what did they do to him? It made me panic, but he was a really, really good, fun character in it.
I mean, it's interesting. I think when I first saw this first time around, he was probably my least favourite character because he was quite clearly not only just the villain of the piece or portrayed as the villain of the piece, he was also somebody who you probably couldn't see many redeeming qualities unless you actually knew that he was only in for what he could get out of it himself. Even in this particular episode, you know, Mark Wilson is obviously the scientist, whereas Fitzhugh is basically seen as just somebody who's along for the ride, who can be experimented on. And as he said himself, basically, he then twists the thing round. We realise it's not just his dedication, it's his rationale for that, and pretends that actually the others are effectively all against him, and it's a conspiracy theory, and so on and so forth. Okay, so, I mean, again, looking at this whole sequence, again, the summation, a huge robot, even bigger than many of the giants that the castaways have encountered, accidentally destroys a store and kills a policeman and so on. We go through that whole narrative. Let's talk about scores and numbers from that particular perspective. Jared, what are you going to go for as far as your particular score for your first ever episode, which actually opened the second season of Land of the Giants? It lasted two seasons, 50-odd shows. What are you going to award it?
I think I'd give it a 7. I'd say I really did like the episode. I thought the acting was incredible in it, and I really did enjoy the themes and also the plot. I would say it would be higher maybe if I'd watched more episodes of the show just to get a bit more of a better understanding of what was going on. But I did like the way that the intro sort of like gave you sort of like a brief summary about, oh, this has happened, and because of it, that's where we are at now. So I think if it wasn't for the intro, I would have ranked it a bit lower, but because the intro allowed me to get an idea of what this show was about, I ranked it a bit more higher, but I really did enjoy it.
It's colourful, but it's not a garish colour. I mean, you actually have fairly muted colours in many ways, and I think that obviously 20th Century Fox were pushing it. This was the last of the quartet of Irwin Allen shows that he was famous for, some might say notorious for, some might say, again, underappreciated shows. There are a few writers such as John Abbott who have written various texts celebrating the work of Irwin Allen. But I think it's fair to say a lot of folks said that Gene Roddenberry was much better at actually working an audience and dealing with fandom and encouraging fandom than Irwin Allen ever really intended to be. I think it's fair to say he would go on to develop a whole range of disaster movies in the 1970s, like Towering Inferno, Earthquake, and so on, all of which would come out of the Irwin Allen scenario. I'm also probably hovering around that 7 mark. I mean, there was one stage I thought it might drop to a 6. I could have probably, on another level, possibly 7.5, perhaps. Be intriguing to find out what some of our other attendees might have actually made of this thing. And again, I can acknowledge that maybe to launch the season with this, it maybe wasn't the strongest episode, but at the same time, again, could be worth considering. The other shows in the quartet, by the way, for Victoria, Lost in Space, which we've considered several times and we'll continue to consider, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, which really started the whole thing off, 4 seasons of Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, and of course that intriguing number with Tony Newman and Doug Phillips, The Time Tunnel. They were the Irwin Allen sort of classics, which, who knows? I mean, Land of the Giants has never been remade unless, as you said, The Borrowers was, no pun intended, appropriating aspects of this, although, again, it was a different area. And, of course, it was originally set back in the early 1980s when, of course, suborbital flights were going to be a natural way of things that we'd be heading through, and maybe another dimension they are. Victoria, I've gone on for quite long enough. What's your score for this episode?
Well, I want to give it a 7.5 because I know we've been saying about them not actually giving all that much information, but sort of that intrigues you to go on and see the next one and the next one to get even more information to the questions that you had in the first one. And also, as Jared was saying, the filming of it with the giants and the smaller people, I mean, I'm not a film technical expert, but to me it was really well filmed, so yeah, I'm going to give it a 7.5.
If I was to ask for a Victoria Simmons song that effectively you feel could relate to this episode, would there be anything that you'd come to mind, or which would spring to mind, which you think maybe that, I mean, would it be Touch the Stars, or would it be something completely different?
I kind of want to say something like trust the lust.
Trust the lust.
Because it's trusting your intuitions.
Which is very true, whether it's the robot, whether he's a good person, whether it's the scientist, how are you going to relate to that? And how are you going to cope with that? Whether it's trusting the police or the SID folk, whether it's trusting the robot or the hydraulic man. Next week, we conclude our investigation of artificial intelligence and the look at narratives with respect to that as we head into a very comparatively up-to-date edition of the Turing test. Featuring a whole range of folk who would actually have and still have very worthwhile careers, including Alicia Vikander and Oscar Isaac and others. It's a relatively small cast, but a very impressive viewpoint as we explore Ex Machina from the perspective of what is it to relate to robots, to beings that we are creating. Whether they are hydraulic in nature, whether they happen to be mechanical in nature. But for the moment, with a few more clips from, of course, Land of the Giants to actually avail ourselves of, and indeed a Victoria Simmons number. We have to say to Jared Palmer, to Victoria Simmons, those final words, keep on resonating.
Well, stop him. He's letting the little people go.
Sending him to his destruction, I hope. Signal's not strong enough to reach.
Interesting in the flames.
The robot, you know, I feel sorry for him.
I shouldn't have told you what happened. You could have used your time to better advantage.
You don't feel sorry for him.
Not him. It. The monster created by a madman. Programmed for violence and murder.
I wasn't violent with Chipper.
Chipper was lucky. I tell you, Barry, I know what I'm talking about. Believe me.
Why would he be so gentle with a trapped animal? He saved Chipper's life. Why, Mr. Fitzhugh?
Well, Barry, I guess sometimes I don't know what I'm talking about. I mean, not exactly. Come, boy. Time for bed.
Thank you.
Hiroshima. She's a black belt in karate, working for the city. She has to discipline her body, 'cause she knows that it's demanding to defeat those evil machines. I know she can beat them. Oh, Yoshime, they don't believe me, but you. They're programmed to destroy us. She's gotta be strong to fight them. So she's taking lots of vitamins, 'cause she knows that it'd be tragic if those evil. Thank you.
We'll be right back.